This is Terry Fenneman. Today is July 26, 2020. I am interviewing Matt Tate, the sports editor of the Lawrence Journal World in Kansas, for the Community Journalism in Middle America, Challenges and Innovations of COVID-19 Coverage Oral History Project. So Matt, why don't you start out telling us how long you've worked in journalism and a little bit about your career?
Yeah, I've been doing this since, I knew I wanted to do this in eighth grade when I realized I wasn't going to make any money playing sports. That was when it really clicked for me. So I wanted to stick with sports somehow. Always loved writing, and the two just became a sort of a natural path for me from that point on. I went to KU and graduated in 2000. I grew up in Lawrence, and in 2001, I was hired by the World Company as a sports editor of two of their weekly newspapers in Bonner Springs, Kansas, and Basser, Kansas. So that was an awesome opportunity for me to put my degree to use. And to be completely honest with you, at the time I was hired, I mean, I grew up around the journal world and in Lawrence, and so that was always sort of a long-range goal for me, was to work at the paper in the town I grew up in, but really didn't know that the company owned weekly papers. I didn't live in those communities, so I had no real idea, but there was nothing open at the journal world at the time I was checking around, but there were a couple of openings at those weeklies, and so did not have a clue how beneficial that would be for me in my career. I mean, I went over there and really just got thrown into it. At both papers, I was the only sports guy. I had a little bit of freelance and part-time help that I hired. You know, in my early 20s, I was already hiring people to help out, and that was kind of crazy. But that was sort of a quick introduction into what being a one-man shop at a weekly paper like that was all about. I mean, it was write the stories, edit the stories, lay out the pages, take the photos. In those days, it was develop the film even occasionally. It was actually film. So, I spent 6 years over there, and in the time I was there, helped actually start another weekly paper in Shawnee called the Shawnee Dispatch. Which was a really cool experience too, because we started that thing from the ground up, and I was involved in a lot of conversations about coverage area and territory and what we wanted to do and how we wanted it to look. And, you know, so that was another experience that I never had any idea I was going to get to be a part of. So I wouldn't have traded any of that for anything. I mean, it was such a great training ground. You learned a little bit of everything, and you had to learn how to be self-sufficient and a self-starter and all of those things. And so really happy that that's where I was able to start my career, and really just been moving up ever since. Tom Keegan, who was the sports editor at the Journal World before me, when he got to town, I reached out to him and just introduced myself, explained to him who I was, what I was hoping to do with my career. We connected pretty early, and from that point on, when he had an opening at the Journal World, I was approached about coming over and filling that. It was the high school sports editor at the time, and I did some copy desk work for sports, and then wrote some high school stuff and covered some high schools, which obviously I had been doing for a long time. So it was just that was a great thing for me too, because Tom Keegan is without question one of my biggest influences and mentors, and he's a guy who covered major professional sports in Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles throughout his career. So learned a lot of great stories. And once I joined the Journal World, I just was fortunate enough to work hard enough to get recognized and keep getting promoted. Eventually became the KU football beat writer. And did that for a handful of years. And then a few years ago, promoted to KU basketball beat writer and KUSports.com editor. And then once Tom left in 2018, I think it was, I was promoted shortly thereafter to sports editor of the Journal World as well. So my career has been unbelievable, because I've been able to be promoted so many times and advance into so many different roles without changing addresses. I've never had to leave this town, and I love Lawrence, and so It's been really cool in that way because I've been able to do it all, high school stuff, editing stuff, KU stuff, college, you know, the whole bit. So, you know, I'm very happy with the way it's all turned out and gone, and look forward to continuing it and trying to find new ways to challenge myself now that I've sort of reached the top rung of the sports ladder at the Journal World.
What is your newspaper circulation?
Print circulation is around 10 or 12,000 right now. It's, you know, we're obviously in the era where it's print is declining and our online, digital subscriptions are increasing. We went to a paywall a couple of years ago and, have had a ton of success with that relative to our goals and what we were hoping to get out of it. So I think we have at the Journal World, ljworld.com, I think we have over 3,500 digital subscribers. And then, yeah, our print circulation is in that 10 to 12,000 range. So, you know, like a lot of newspapers, we're in the same boat as many of them, but, our digital subscriptions are on the rise and increasing. And so that's something that we are continuing to try to grow and certainly very proud of how it's gone so far.
And how many people are in your newsroom?
We have about, I should have counted this up, but we have, I want to say around 30 to 35 full-time. We have a pretty solid editorial staff, you know, of various beats on the news side of things, with 7 or 8 full-time writers and a handful of editors. We have 3 copy desk people, and then we have 3 full-time sports employees as well. And then, of course, advertising staff and circulation and that whole crew too. So it's probably in the 35 to 40 range.
And who owns the paper?
We are owned currently by Ogden Newspapers. It's a company based out of West Virginia, and they bought us from the World Company, which was family owned for over 100 years and right here in Lawrence, and they sold, I think, 3 years ago now, and maybe approaching 4. I can't really remember the dates, but the Ogden owns about 45 or so other papers across the country, and I think since they purchased us, they have purchased at least 6 or 7 other papers after us. So it's a company that still very much believes in newspapers and very much believes in, you know, local journalism. And they've certainly been different in a lot of ways, but they've been supportive in a lot of ways too, and continue to try to put us in the position to do what we can do to serve Lawrence and do the best we can in that area too.
When did the impact of COVID-19 on the Lawrence Journal World start?
You know, honestly, immediately. I would say it was in mid-March would be the earliest that I could pinpoint it for how it impacted sports, certainly, because that was around the time of the Big 12 basketball tournament over in Kansas City. And really before that, I mean, the week before that, I think, let's see, March 7th, maybe, I was in Lubbock, Texas, covering KU Texas Tech. And although I'd heard about the coronavirus and certainly was aware of it being a real thing, it was not anything that kept me from flying or had me concerned or doing anything different as I traveled to cover games and things like that. And then, you know, right around that same time was when we first were sort of asking Bill Self, KU's basketball coach, about, you know, his thoughts on the situation. And there was talk about, you know, no fans in the stands at some of these upcoming events and things like that. And that, of course, was before they got canceled altogether. So, you know, it really started right there. And as much as everybody kind of was treating the topic with a serious tone, I think that, I was putting Bill Self and players coronavirus comments into, you know, like notebook forms. They weren't still quite headlines yet. I mean, I just thought it was sort of a, well, this is interesting and people would probably be curious to hear what they're saying, but certainly did not know when those answers were being uttered that it was going to completely alter everything we knew about sports for the next several months. So early March, mid March, somewhere in that range was really when it showed up on our radar. And of course, you know, they canceled the basketball tournaments. When I was over there, I was over in Kansas City, preparing to cover games in the Big 12 tournament, and we were told there were no games. I'll never forget the day before the Wednesday of the Big 12 tournament. It's the four lowest seeds that play on Wednesday night, but leading up to that is sort of a media day where all the teams are available and their practice is open and things like that. And I'll just never forget the whole scene that Wednesday and Thursday. It really was like watching a movie play out. I mean, I'd look around the press room and I'd see little pockets of conversations, three people here, four people there. And it truly was, I don't think you would call it an out of body experience, but like I said, I didn't feel like I was even present. I felt like I was watching something unfold on a television screen, because that's exactly what it was. It was just, rumors and I heard this, and hey, did you hear this or did you see that? I mean, things like that were just spreading throughout the day. And it was very surreal to not only be watching that, but also to be, realizing that I was right in the middle of it and a part of it. And at that point was when we realized, I think, that this was going to be serious. At the time that the Big 12 tournaments were canceled, they were still talking about playing the NCAA tournament, and the whole idea was with no fans. And so I had parents of players messaging me and texting me saying, well, does this mean families can go? And of course, I didn't know at that point. Nothing had been decided yet, but I was certainly trying to figure out if the media could go and how they were going to handle that. And it wasn't until the tournament, the NCAA tournament, that is, it wasn't until that was outright canceled that I thought anything other than it was just going to be a weird March. But I certainly didn't realize it was going to be this weird of a March. So everything kind of just took off from there.
How has your newsroom adjusted its routines during the pandemic?
Well, like a lot of people, we've been working from home almost exclusively. We've had a few people working in the office from time to time. But I would say, 90 to 95% of our staff has been at home. That includes our copy desk, which we were able to, that was probably the biggest challenge. I do a lot of my work from home anyway. I mean, I have a laptop and I have my interviews and I transcribe and write, and I could do that anywhere there's an internet connection. So not a major change for me necessarily, but certainly for our entire operation to produce the technology and get everybody wired and running from home to put out the paper is something that certainly wasn't easy. It didn't take days or weeks to manage, but it was a very important part of this thing. And so our copy desk has been pretty much stationed in their own houses and communicating online, whether it's email or Zoom chats or whatever it is. That's been a big part of how things have had to change. Advertising, certainly doing video chats and daily meetings in that regard. And obviously with regard to how they, talk to their clients and such and sell advertising. I mean, it's gone very, very digital, very home-based. And I think that everybody, it didn't take long for people to kind of get comfortable with that. I think everybody really understood how serious this was and that this was not just going to be for a week or two, but that, this is something we had to really get our heads around and figure out a way to make it work. And I'm telling you what, I'm pretty impressed by pretty much everybody at our paper for doing it with such ease. I mean, they really have transitioned very well and continue to be efficient and operate at a very high level and work hard. I've been impressed by everybody in that regard.
What is the pandemic like in your community? How many cases have there been?
For the first couple of months, I was really impressed with Douglas County. I think our, our cases were in the 40s or 60s. I mean, it was not very high at all. And then once things started to open up, which I'm sure this is pretty common throughout the country, really, but when things started to open up again and, you know, people started getting back out there a little bit or back to work, things took off from there a little bit. There was a you probably saw this, but I think the New York Times even gave Douglas County a little bit of a shout out early on for how we were handling the pandemic. And that's always cool to see. And I think that it's grown. The cases have grown. I think it's up around 400 now or something. I could be completely off on that, but it's certainly the last 2 months of it have been way different than the first 2 months were. And I don't know if that's the way it is everywhere or people just kind of, you know, getting a little bit relaxed, but also realizing, hey, you know, life has to go on. We can't shut down forever. I think that's been a part of our response to it as a community. And that's definitely changed the numbers some too. But overall, I still think a very good place to be during this. I mean, you look at some of the major cities in the country that have become hotspots and are turning, you know, crazy numbers and things like that. And we certainly haven't had to face anything like that.
How have you personally adjusted to being a journalist during the pandemic? You know, with family obligations, obviously in sports, you're now home more often. You know, talk about that whole transition.
Yeah, it's been incredible, really. I mean, whether it's work or life, I mean, I'm gone most of the time, really. I mean, I'm doing something 5-6 nights a week and often traveling for work and of course working weekends in sports and things like that. So to be home for this long of a time has been really, I mean, it's been the only silver lining I can see in this whole thing. I mean, I've got to spend so much more time with my family, my wife and our 5-year-old daughter, a lot of family dinners, a lot of time cooking together, a lot of time, playing together, a lot of walks with the dog, trips around the neighborhood, and those things have been, of course, like I said, a silver lining of this, and really, really made you remember and realize what's important in the world, and not that my job isn't, not that what we do isn't, but it's been such a great thing to have that kind of time with family, So that's been, you know, at the same time an adjustment because my brain runs fast, my life runs fast, and so, you know, there are times where you kind of feel like maybe you're off, maybe you should be doing something and you're not, and how do you just calm down? How do you just sit there and relax? How do you have time to cook? You know, but when the whole sports world shut down, I mean, that certainly made it easy. Obviously things were still happening and there were still questions that had to be asked and interviews that needed to be conducted. And we had to figure out as much as we could about where sports was headed. And that was a challenge too, because a lot of times the powers that be, whether it was at the NCAA or the high school level or at KU, I mean, we were asking a ton of questions and sometimes they just didn't have the answers either. They were trying to figure it out too. So, that was an adjustment as well. So much of a sports writer's life is, even though it changes day to day, and it's one of the things I absolutely love about my job, you wake up and you don't exactly know what's coming. There is still a rhythm to it. There is still a bit of a schedule where, you know, you're running up to KU and you're doing a press conference a couple of times a week, or there are games on a schedule, obviously. And when those things are all gone, you realize you don't put much gas in your car because you don't have to, because you're really not going anywhere. So that was certainly an adjustment too. And then within our own newspaper, I'm sure like a bunch of places, certainly in our industry and beyond, April 9th, I believe, 9th or 10th was the day that my two full-time sports staff writers and an intern that we had as a KU student who did a fall and spring semester internship for us. The internship position was eliminated at that time, and then my two full-time guys were put on furlough. So that really changed it for me right there. I was quickly thrown back into my days of the weekly newspaper guy, where I had to be responsible for a little bit of everything and, you know, make sure nothing fell through the cracks. My beat prior to that, prior to all this, has been Kansas basketball, and that is what I do 365 days a year. And I have not just done Kansas basketball over the last 4 months. I wrote down the other day a list of all the things that I have written about during this pandemic, and all the different areas that I've kind of touched on, and, you know, local stuff from the high school scene, and of course a little bit of national stuff as well with some Major League Baseball and things like that. And the list was crazy. I mean, it was, you know, it really was a reminder of what it was like at the weekly paper. I mean, it was KU men's basketball, KU women's basketball, KU football, KU volleyball, KU golf, Free State High School basketball, Lawrence High basketball, Bishop Seabury High School basketball, Kansas State High School Activities Association policy, KU policy, Lawrence High baseball, Free State softball, KU football recruiting, KU basketball recruiting, KU volleyball recruiting, three things at Eudora High School, Major League Baseball, NBA, the Royals, Sporting KC. I mean, you know, that's the list, and it just has been nonstop in that regard. And so most people ask me, what are you writing about? How do you do this? What, there's no sports. And while I understand that question very clearly, I do realize why they're asking it. That it just wasn't entirely true. There was always something going on, always something to ask about or to look ahead to, or to wonder about, of course. There have been days that have been a little bit dull, and I've had to really dig and scrape the bottom of the barrel to find something. But still, the majority of the days have certainly been not like any other, but like any other, in the sense that, you know, you have a story to do or a few stories to do, and you have to make some calls and find some people to talk about it, and you know, you move on from there. So it's been very different, but also still continued to have that rhythm, just again without going anywhere in your car very often.
Just a couple of follow-ups. What are the names of your wife and daughter?
My wife is Allison and our daughter is Kate.
And then the names of your sports reporters?
Benton Smith is our KU football beat writer, and he's been with the paper almost as long as I have. I was hired by the Journal World in 2007, so with the company since 2001, but actually at the Journal World since 07. And I believe he started right around the same time, and in a lot of ways has had a similar path. I mean, he did some work at our weekly paper in Tonganoxie, and was our high school guy in Lawrence, and then got promoted to KU football. And so, you know, similar path for sure, but been there about the same time, or length of time. And then Shane Jackson is currently our high school sports reporter. He handles all of that stuff and manages a ton of events on a weekly basis. I mean, he keeps it all straight and knows where we need to be. So, yeah, good stuff. And Benton went to North Carolina, University of North Carolina, and Shane was a KU graduate.
So you've mentioned the cancellation of the basketball tournaments, and then all of the different schools that in the sports you've been trying to keep up with. But what else have been some of the biggest stories that you've covered related to the pandemic?
You know, one of the things that it's really given me an opportunity to do is spend time writing stories that I didn't have time to do in the past. You know, there's so much of a just constant motion when you're trying to cover this beat, and you're doing it at a staff with a limited number of people, and it moves fast. Kansas basketball is a 365 day a year thing. So, sometimes there's just not time to sit down and dive into, hey, I'd really like to talk to that guy about that, you know, but boy, I don't have time. I've always made the joke, that, and you know, it's not really to make light of anything, but it's one of the things that's kind of helped me get through this whole thing. As a sports writer during this pandemic, you really find out where you sit pretty quickly, because, you know, for a couple of months there, people were home. and they weren't going anywhere and they weren't busy and they didn't have that excuse that they couldn't answer their phone or get back to you. They had nothing but time. So you found out really quickly where you stood, because if they took your call, then that was a good sign. And if they didn't take your call, then maybe that was something you needed to think about. But luckily I was able to get in touch with all kinds of people that I wanted to. And most often people picked up and I really appreciated that because it made the job easier. One of the things that was fun during this time was, you know, the Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls documentary came out during the pandemic in May, I believe it was. And so that was, what was that, 4 weeks in a row of 2 episodes a night or something like that. So for 4 weeks, after each one of those Sunday night episodes, you know, was aired on television, I followed up with a story connecting Michael Jordan to Kansas or to Lawrence or to KU in some manner. And those were really fun and they were really well received. And what I loved about them was they were still timely and topical, even though they weren't. You know, one of the stories I did was about an exhibition game that the Bulls played in 1997 at Allen Fieldhouse. Obviously, that wasn't anything new or breaking news of any kind, but talking to KU players and KU coaches and people who were there that night, you know, that brought it back to today. And it was relevant because that documentary was airing and because with no sports going on, that was the talk of the sports world. I mean, it was on SportsCenter. It was, everybody was talking about it. Hey, did you watch this? Hey, did you see that last night? Oh, you know, I mean, it really felt like something real, even though it was just a documentary and we weren't really having anything live. So those were fun to do that 4 weeks in a row and people really seemed to enjoy that. I did like that a lot. Because I don't think that's any of those stories that I did relating Jordan to Lawrence or to KU. I mean, I can't imagine I would have even thought of doing those any other time, let alone had time to do them or space to do them. So those were cool. And then another one that I really liked that was along those same lines, there was a former KU basketball player named Tarik Black, who played a little bit in the NBA with the Los Angeles Lakers and Houston Rockets. And Tarik Black was on the bench for the Lakers for Kobe Bryant's last game right before he retired. And I remember watching that game and watching their interaction on television. And I loved covering Tarik when he was here. He was one of the better dudes to ever come through KU. And I thought that would be cool to check in with him and just talk to him about that whole experience. I mean, Kobe Bryant's a legendary figure, one of the top basketball players of all time. I thought that'd be a fun story someday. And then, of course, at the beginning of the year, Kobe Bryant died in that helicopter crash, and that changed things. Obviously, that's a whole different story. But this was the time to do it. I mean, Tarik was not playing, and so I think I did it maybe on the 1 month anniversary or 2 month anniversary or something. It might have been 4 month anniversary. I don't remember exactly, but it was something like that. And I timed it to run, you know, to give it some sort of time angle and relevance. But I got a hold of him, and we talked for quite a while just about the events of that night and that game and the pregame and what he remembered and what he said to Kobe that night. And then because of current realities, I mean, we were able to talk about, you know, his emotions about Kobe Bryant dying and things like that too. So, it, you know, that was another one that I always wanted to do, but never really found time to do it. And this gave me the time to do that. So I don't know if that answers the question exactly. I mean, you know, there have obviously been a plenty of days where we've had to still do the hard news stuff and talk to KU athletic directors or KU officials and find out, hey, you know, what are your plans here? What are you going to do with this? You know, things like that about scheduling, about staffing, about financial issues, all those things, you know, so those have been a big part of it too. But those are kind of just part of the job and things you have to do as you cover anything. But those other stories that I mentioned were sort of, you know, different things that I probably would not have been able to do otherwise, and I was able to here in the last 4 months.
How have the financials, as far as advertising at your newspaper, changed during the pandemic?
Quite a bit, obviously. There's a reason that sports guys were furloughed, and that's part of it. We weren't untouched by that issue at all. But I do know that right away in the first month or so, I'm not privy to most of this information, obviously don't know it intimately or anything like that, but just based on what I heard, I mean, I know that we were one of the better papers in our company, if not the best in our company, in terms of holding on to advertising dollars and percentages and things like that, not just right away, but throughout this. And that's a testament to our advertising staff. They've worked really hard to, not only hold on to some business and try to maintain what was there, but also to build new relationships and find new ways to help businesses and show the value of what we can offer them, both as a print product and an online product. I know we were one of the hardest things the journalism industry, the newspaper industry, did not need anything like this to expedite the way things are headed and the trends that we're facing with shrinking staffs and papers closing and things like that. But I do know that we were set up to have one of the best Marches that we've ever had, and well on our way to that, financially, that is. And then, of course, the rug gets yanked out from under us, and so at that point it was just try to scramble and try to do the best we can for the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, however many months it is. But yeah, I think because of that work and because we were positioned to have such a strong March, that was probably a big part of the reason we were able to, keep our heads above water initially, at least. Again, it was not anything positive. It was not a good feeling. It was not, yay, we're celebrating all the money we're making or anything crazy like that. It was still a bad hit, as it was for papers across the country. But they've done everything within their power to try to make this thing, something that can survive and been real creative in doing it. I've been impressed by that too.
How do you see the business model for the industry changing as a result of the pandemic?
That's a great question. I haven't thought too much about it. I haven't had time to think, really. Every day is just, the biggest issue for me during this time has not been filling print pages. It's been our web traffic. I mean, in the past with other staff members, if I want to go play golf on a Thursday morning, I had two or sometimes three other guys that I knew were working that morning and could update content online and post new blogs or videos or breaking news or whatever happened. And that was always comforting. And I'd say, hey, I'm going to go play golf, or I have a doctor's appointment or whatever. And they'd do the same, but you always knew someone was there. And we would typically update our KUSports.com site, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day sometimes. And that's a pretty standard day when things are going well. And so during this time, that's all, the print pages are easy to fill, really. I mean, it's the web traffic that's been my biggest concern, because if I, for instance, that 1997 Michael Jordan exhibition game story I told you about, I was on the phone with maybe a dozen people that day. I probably spent 7 hours working on that story, talking to people, tracking people down, hearing their memories, transcribing, writing. And as much fun as it was to do that, and as much as I enjoyed, the product and the finished project and all that, I mean, for that 7 hours, I wasn't updating the website, and no one else was either. And so those have been some challenges that have really, I mean, I'm very proud to tell you that I've still been able to update KUSports.com about 3 to 4 times a day, by myself. And that's probably on average, sometimes more, sometimes less, but that's been important, because I think it's really important for us to maintain our brand, maintain our spot in the market, and remind people that, hey, you know, things are different. There aren't sports right now. There isn't a sports staff right now, but we're going to continue to give you the coverage that, that you expect when you log on to our website. And then, you know, some of that makes it in the paper, some of it doesn't. And we've kind of just used the website and the paper, you know, as they work together with the newspaper these days is pretty much just the collection of the day's best stuff. That doesn't mean everything makes it, and some of it can't make it. You can't put a podcast in the paper. You can't put a video in the paper, you know, and things like that. So I don't think I really got to your question yet, but those have been challenges that I've sort of had to figure out. And I'll be completely honest with you. I mean, furlough is better than layoffs, and I'm really happy that my guys were furloughed, both for them and for the future of our paper. But I mean, nothing is guaranteed, you know. So I've spent some time thinking about the future and thinking about, well, what if they only bring one of those guys back? Or what if they don't bring either of those guys back? How will it look then? How can I possibly do what we've always done or more? And I don't have answers to those questions yet. And they've been a little bit terrifying to confront, really, because the easy answer is you can't. You know, you can't maintain the standard of what 3, 4, 5 people do when you're just one person or when you're just two people. You know, something has to change. And so I do believe that even if they both come back full time, I do think there will be some things that we try to streamline more. And I think that some of our focus for the future will probably be on trying to get back more to writing and I've obviously been able to maintain our site by myself here, but if I were to get my guys back and we could, you know, go after this thing together, I think it would be really cool for us to try to figure out a way to maybe get some sort of regular Sunday feature thing together where there's at least once or twice a month, if not every week, more of a long form enterprising type of story in sports that we can present and offer to people. Because I know it can be done and I I've had to do some of that now. But it would be much easier with three guys, obviously. So there's some things like that have kind of crossed my mind. And I know that's a very sports centric answer, but I do think that's part of it. I mean, I think that when you look at digital subscriptions and you look at the fact that those are going up and the print numbers are going down, eventually they're going to cross. And I think that what we've learned about our digital subscriptions in the last few years is that, you know, people want to read stuff that's important to them. They want to read stuff that entertains them. And so we have to be very intentional about thinking about what we're writing. And some of it you have to throw together. Some of it you have to just put up because it's the news. And some of it's just hard news, basic stories, facts, things like that. But ways to entice people to subscribe, giving them something they're not getting anywhere else. I mean, I think that's all part of the future. I think it was part of the future to begin with, even before the pandemic hit. But I think that the pandemic has really reminded you and kind of brought that to the forefront that hey, this is going to be really important moving forward.
What changes, if any, have you noticed with your reader base during the pandemic?
I haven't noticed any. I mean, not really. I mean, our traffic is pretty close to the same. I mean, you know, it helps that this happened in the summer because, at least mostly in the summer, I should say, because, you know, our traffic always dips a little in the summer there, especially at KUSports.com. I mean, when you have a site devoted to KU sports and KU athletics, when it's the summertime and there are no games, then, you know, there's just going to be less traffic by nature of that. So, I think in that regard, it's been very similar and the traffic's been pretty steady. I know that I've heard from a lot more people. Typically we get feedback when people are angry or upset or think we did a crappy job of something, and, you know, year after year, month after month, that's kind of the way it goes. And, you know, that's not trying to make anybody feel sorry for us. That's just generally how it goes. But, I think that our readers have been very aware of our situation. I think, you know, when you see three guys buy lines regularly and then all of a sudden you only see one for a bunch of months in a row, I think I don't have to necessarily announce that the two guys were furloughed. It's just kind of obvious to people. And so I think they've been compassionate largely in that. And I've received a lot of emails or phone calls or even Twitter messages that just say, hey, you're doing a great job, or hang in there, or keep up the great work, or whatever. And every one of those has meant the world to me, because it's been a monster. It's been, some days have just been absolute horror. I mean, it's just, and I'm not trying to make it sound so dramatic, but some days you just don't know how you're going to get it all done. And worse, some days you don't even know that you're going to have something to write. So it's been exhausting in that regard. But when I get a message like that from somebody, it really does lift me up. And those are great to get anytime, but they've been really appreciated in this pandemic. So I think people, you know, of course they want to see more. Everybody always wants more, especially now when they've been bored and they're desperate for sports. But I don't think anybody's been too disappointed by what we've been able to put out on our, especially online, but in the paper too. The feedback's been awesome.
How has the pandemic influenced your views of the role of journalism in society?
As a lifelong, since eighth grade, wanted to be a journalist and followed that path, I don't think you could have found someone who thought it was more important. But I certainly think that this has shown the world how important it is. It's shown our community how important it is. Our numbers and our subscriptions have been terrific. Not only have our digital subscriptions gone up, but we've increased print subscriptions. I mean, small increases, but you know, small is better than none, and or better than a decrease. So I think that the work our news staff has done, and obviously that we've done in sports too, has been so valuable to our community. Helping them stay informed about the pandemic, helping them understand, you know, factual quality information that's important for them to know. And in this case, is very much life and death. I mean, it truly could be. And so I think that, it's shown me even more that journalism, and especially local journalism in small communities, is so vital. I mean, I know that everywhere you look on Twitter or wherever, you see, you know, people preaching that message, and hey, subscribe to your local newspaper. And I just can't emphasize that enough. I mean, it's, you know, we're not asking to get rich. We're not trying to, capitalize on anything. We are simply trying to create a situation where we can continue to do what we do. And that's largely to serve the community and to be a part of the community. And so all of those things, I think, they were important to me to begin with and always have been my entire life. But this whole crazy 4 months and especially the early portions of it where people really had no idea what was going on or what was going to happen or anything like that. I mean, I think that this has really underscored the importance of just having a newspaper and journalists that you can trust and that are trying to bring you the best and most up-to-date information possible on a daily basis, and really more than a daily basis. I mean, really, truly 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, it's still the most important thing we do.
What changes to your newspaper operations during the pandemic do you expect will continue when it's over?
I think there's a good chance that people will be allowed to work from home more, provided they're able to get their jobs done. And I don't see why not. I mean, that's something that's always worked for us in sports. And obviously we can't cover a game from home, so we're not working from home on a game night. But when you're writing features or you go to a press conference, and instead of going back to the office, you want to go back home or sometimes to a coffee shop and write or whatever. I mean, I think that that's something that we've shown is very doable. And I think that that'll probably be something that that the rest of the newsroom understands is possible. And not just writers and not just editors, but you know, perhaps some of the advertising staff and maybe even circulation to some degree. I mean, I think they're there are a lot of things that we've had to make work from a technology standpoint and a digital standpoint, because people weren't supposed to be, you know, interacting in person, face to face, and things like that. And we've made those things work. And so I think some of those things, especially in terms of just, you know, things like paying your bills or, you know, things like, getting information about circulation or having a, you know, issue with your paper, things like that. I mean, a lot of that was online anyway, but I think that now that it's gone for the last couple of months exclusively there, I think that a lot of that stuff could continue too. So, but I really do think, and I, you know, I've thought this about a lot of industries. I mean, I think that when you look at athletic directors in the Big 12 and they have their regular meetings and they fly down to Dallas to meet every few months or whatever it is, now during the pandemic, they've met more than ever and they've been able to do it over Zoom. And there's just really no reason for them not to. And especially with universities, you know, needing to tighten up their belts and figure out ways to save money to kind of survive this whole thing moving forward. I think that that's something that's probably going to happen at that level too. I think you'll have a lot more Zoom meetings and that makes a lot of financial sense. And so I think that, you know, those are just two industries, but I think a lot of places and a lot of industries will be sort of seeing it the same way. And I think that's a great thing. I think there's a lot of good that could come from that.
Are there any other changes to sports that you see coming out of this?
To sports coverage or sports in general?
Sports in general, but let's talk about both.
Yeah, sure. The sports in general one's much tougher. I feel like the like Major League Baseball and stuff, it's been really wild to watch and read AP articles about, you know, no spitting and handshake lines and things like that. I don't know if that'll last forever or if that'll just be sort of a fleeting thing, but you know, that's obviously not life and death stuff and it's not that important, but it's part of the culture. And there's so many things that are within sports that are like that, you know, handshakes and hugs and that human interaction and human contact that, you know, I think that it would not surprise me if some of that stuff was sort of gone forever. And you know, not necessarily negatively, but just we get used to it not being there and then it just kind of goes away. But you know, in terms of the games and things like that, I mean, obviously I think that, you know, it's still very early in the process, really. We don't know what the rest of this year is going to look like, let alone 2021. There's no doubt that you could have some situations where the capacity at events is affected by this well into the future. You know, 5 years from now, maybe not, but for the next year or two, it's definitely possible. And if that's in the best interest of community health, then I you know, it's not my place to say, but I certainly think that would probably be the best move to make sure that they're doing their part. And you know, so I think things like that. I mean, games are the same, you know, they're when they're able to play, they're going to play the same way. They're going to play hard. I think they're going to compete hard. And that's what those guys do. That's what the athletes do. And the men and women in all sports who compete. So I don't think you'll see drastic changes in that regard. I think it's all that stuff on the edges and the fringes that, you know, it seems like some of that stuff might change temporarily. And then it wouldn't surprise me if some of that lasted. From sports coverage standpoint, it's really hard to know right now because, you know, I'll be honest. I mean, it's, what is it, July, when we're doing this interview and KU's first basketball game, which would be the first official road trip that I should take, you know, is November 5th or something like that, maybe November 10th. But I'm not in any hurry to get on a plane and go do that. It's in Chicago. That right now doesn't seem like something I'm dying to do. So I will. You know, if they're playing, I'll be there. And, you know, those are just things we do. But it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, going out to West Virginia, you know, that's a long trip, whether it's basketball or football, and we go cover that. And Oftentimes, our paper's been the only one there covering it in both of those sports. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if those longer trips are sometimes maybe, well, maybe not. Hey, let's just sit this one out and we'll figure out a different way to cover it. And, you know, save a little bit of money, but more importantly, you know, maintain your safety and not connect through two different airports and then rent a car and make a 2-hour drive and go through all those potential, you know, different things that you might encounter along the way. So, you know, hopefully a lot more will be known by the time the winter rolls around, but I'm not holding my breath on anything. So I think things like that in terms of, you know, the coverage that we do, that's definitely crossed my mind.
What do you want journalists 100 years from now who may be covering a new pandemic? What do you want them to know?
Oh, wow. That's a great question, too. I think that from a journalist standpoint or perspective, obviously I've talked a lot about that tonight. I think that, you know, the job doesn't change. You know, your job is still to get quality information and be as accurate and thorough as possible and stay on top of things that change. And, you may have something put together by 3 o'clock on one day that changes between 3 and 5 and you have to be able to adjust to that. But that's journalism. That's what we do every day anyway. I think that from the perspective of the journalist, I think one of the things I would beg those people to remember is that it is so important for you to survive this thing. And you you have to do your job and you have to do the best job you possibly can, but you also have to be reasonable and, you know, remember to take care of yourself. And, you know, in my situation where, you know, I've been put into the position of having to run the sports section and our websites by myself for a while. I mean, there was no way that I was going to continue to update our site 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day like we were by myself. And if I had tried to do that, I'd have been run ragged and it wouldn't have been the best thing for me or our paper or our coverage or anything. So I think it's really that would be the number one thing that I would remind or impress upon people is that, you know, you have to be reasonable with what's possible. You have to be realistic. And if that means you can't do what you've always done or reach the levels that you've always reached, your standard doesn't have to change. You can still do quality work and you should strive for that. But you have to cut yourself a break too. And you have to realize that you can't just sit in your house and work 15, 18 hours a day. You have to get exercise. You have to, you know, interact with your family. You have to be healthy. You have to take a break. You have to eat well. You have to, you know, get outside. I mean, things like that, whatever you can do to keep yourself fresh and going and maintain some sort of some sense of, you know, just normal and keep your body where it needs to be able to function at a high level. I think that's so important. And I, you know, I've struggled with that at times, but overall I think done pretty well. It's really helped, as we mentioned earlier, having my wife and daughter here and, you know, remembering the importance of them in my world and what they mean to me and taking a break to, you know, work on a puzzle for an hour. I mean, it doesn't sound like the most exciting life in the world, but it's, those moments are moments we'll remember forever. And you know, especially having our daughter out of school. I mean, she hasn't started kindergarten yet, but she, you know, her daycare was closed for a while and they had some teachers that tested positive once she was able to go back. And so then we pulled her out. And so we've had to get creative with ways that we kind of work with her in the house and you know, do our regular jobs and duties, but also make sure she's got what she needs. You know, you've seen this maybe on, I don't know, Facebook or Twitter or wherever it's been, but I've seen it a bunch of times, and I think it really applies in my house. I mean, years and years from now, when my daughter's, you know, 30 years old or whatever, and she asks about the pandemic, and we talk about it of 2020 and all that, you know, I would imagine what my wife and I will say is, you know, that was one of the craziest times ever. I mean, we were stressed always. We were worried about the future. We were scared about the virus. We didn't know what our industry was going to do, and, you know, all this stuff. And I really think that our daughter will remember, you know, well, what I remember is that we ate dinner together every night. We had a lot of laughs. We swam in the pool. We had a lot of fun. And it was one of the best times of my life. And I hope that's true. And I hope a lot of people are in that position. I feel very fortunate that I can say that I am. But you know, that's been a huge part of me keeping that balance and maintaining. So I know that was a little bit of a tangent, but I think that's the number one thing that I would tell anyone dealing with this 100 years from now. You just have to be realistic and reasonable with what you can expect from yourself and how much you push yourself. You know, everybody knows their job, and we're all professionals, and you have to do what you have to do, but you got to take care of yourself too.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I'm a rambler, so I would imagine if there was, I spit it out here somewhere in this last hour. I'm happy to answer any more questions, but I think that's been a pretty good summary of the last 4 months. I mean, you know, there's been equal parts fun and equal parts fear, the only thing I've told anybody that's asked how's it going or how are you doing your job or whatever, it's one day at a time. It's I don't worry about the future too much. I just try to do the best I can that particular day, and then wake up the next day and try to do it again. When my boss told me about my sports guys being furloughed in April, early April, he was very compassionate about it, and he said, I don't have any idea when we're going to be able to bring them back, but you know, I would probably prepare for August 1st as a pretty good sort of date to kind of circle on your calendar, and you know, maybe nothing before that. And I remember thinking, I mean, the gut punch that was to me in April. It seemed so far away, and it seemed so daunting to think about doing this by myself for that long a period of time. I really, from that moment on, didn't allow myself to think long term like that. It was really just wake up, do the best I can, find interesting stuff, entertain people, give them an outlet. Usually sports is an outlet, but there are no sports. So let me figure out a way that my writing and our coverage of whatever it is, let me let that be an outlet for people. And so when you have that approach, it's a day at a time thing. And lo and behold, here I am talking to you 5 or 6 days before it turns August 1st. I would have never thought it would have gone this fast. So now I'm hoping like heck that they're coming back, you know, and still don't know. But that approach has allowed me to get from April to August. And so if it continues into the future, that's how I'll continue to approach it.
Okay. This is the conclusion of this oral history.